What's going on, everybody? This is Bud Elliott here of the Knollcast, and we are, of course, live. Well, not we. It's actually me tonight. Graham is off at a speaking engagement, so pretty cool there. And I'll let him fill you all in on what exactly they have going on there. But been a pretty nice couple of days for the Knolls, and I figured we wanted to talk about a few fun things. Unfortunately, I do want to start off tonight sending our thoughts and prayers and, to the Marcus Houtson family. That just sucks to see his passing this morning. I was talking to a buddy, Danny Cannell, and he's like, is this real? And I was like, man, I hope not. And unfortunately, it was. Start up tonight, man, just RIP to the Rooster. I went back and watched some of that classic late 90s game when, Winky had gone down with the neck injury. If you're a new Knoll, if you're somebody who is, maybe not in their 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s, go back and watch that. That was a pretty wild time. Winky, your Heisman favorite, had gotten injured, and Florida was a pretty, talented team. And, he beats them. Not by himself, had a couple kind of shaky moments, but amazing game, made a lot of plays with his feet. And, that was just a classic game and a classic moment. I think everybody will always have a special place in their heart of Florida State fandom for the Rooster. So, rip to Marcus Houtson. And I know I'd seen his son, who's a 2028 prospect, making some plays on Twitter. And, clips of it, obviously. He's not making plays on Twitter. But Marcus had just been just a couple days ago posting – posting some of those clips. So that sucks. No easy way to transition out of that. I do want to thank our sponsors, obviously Louisiana Hot Sauce, Tarpon Cellars, always supporting our show, always doing such a great job with those products. Had a little Louisiana Hot Sauce tonight. Look, you guys know what it is. Tarpon Cellars, awesome experience, awesome wines, Louisiana Hot Sauce. Find it at Publix, find it at Winn-Dixie, find it at wherever you get your groceries. So Sprouts, maybe? I don't know. Public's pretty good. All right. So people are asking a lot of questions, and that is good. Yeah, drop some questions in there. Potentially we'll see we'll see what we have time for tonight. I wanted to open with some NFL draft talk, and I want to come at this from a couple different ways. If Graham had not had the speaking engagement tonight, I was hoping to do more like draft reaction stuff with him and just kind of bounce it back and forth. But, I mean, that was basically like a three-day party for the Knolls. Pretty much everybody who you really thought was going to get drafted did. And, maybe two or three guys, Dent, Deloach, and Lovett, for different reasons, obviously. They didn't, but I think they'll all have a shot to, maybe make a roster. We'll see. NFL got to see Keon Coleman. I mean, that's just really cool, right? Like to see his personality come out, and you hope that they use him in a way that is conducive to his skill set. I know they said they're going to use him as like a big big X on the outside. Certainly possible. I'm also like interested. Do they move him into the slot and have him be kind of like a large slot at all? I think that could be pretty fun. Florida State video team was chronicling all this stuff. The NFL guys were. We're doing so as well. A lot of graphics being put out. The video between Fisk and Jared Verse, for everybody out there who wants to say, like, oh, you can't establish good culture with transfers, watch that video and get back to me. Let me know if you still think that, right? That's something there for sure. Like, those guys have a real connection, and I think that it is important that those guys are highlighting how they were developed at Florida State. Maybe not so much Keon because he was only there for, 6 months, 7 months. He was pretty much, ready-made. But Jared Verse, he did get a lot better in his time. I think Fisk came on, throughout the season quite a bit. There are other guys who got developed here out of the portal who were not great when FSU took them. Jerrion Jones, we've talked about this. The only guy who thought Jerrion Jones was going to get drafted 3 years ago was Jerrion Jones. I mean, his numbers were objectively terrible. And now, You know, he goes top 100 to Jacksonville. I think that is, that's awesome for him. It's easy to say, like, hey, yeah, look at Trey Benson, what a freak athlete. But you know, Ryan Bartow had to stick with that relationship, right? And that kid gets in the portal and he's like, look, I was always, you know, always good with this kid. Let's investigate this one. Mario had him at Oregon and didn't really try to get him at Miami. Now that's very, you know, variety of reasons. I'm not necessarily dinging them for that, but you would think they would be in the best position to know. And you know, FSU took a chance that his rehab had gone well enough and you know, he continued to get better, faster, trust the knee more. And I feel like they did a nice job, you know, developing him throughout the process. Johnny Wilson, I can very vividly remember being in the lobby with a bunch of personnel guys from the Pac-12 when FSU took Johnny Wilson. If you recall, their receiver room in 2021 was terrible, just horrible. You know, Johnny Wilson comes in. They also took Micah Pittman from, where did they take Pittman from? Because he came for state and then went to Utah. But at the time, it was like, okay, oh, Oregon, right. So I can just very vividly remember those guys saying, man, I don't know, dude. Like, Wilson's soft. Wilson can't catch the ball. You know, Wilson can't get off press. And look, I'm not saying those weren't valid concerns. Those were the concerns. Florida State did a nice job working with him to get him better. Now, you might say, like, hey, is a sixth round or fifth round pick disappointing there? I don't know. Like, getting off press is still going to be an issue there because he's so big. If you get into his body, it's kind of all over. You know, can the guy play big in big-time situations? At times, yes. At times, no. But I feel like he's a much better player. Cut the drop rate like basically in half. And so it was a nice evaluation of potential at a time where you had basically no leverage to go out and get attractive guys. You didn't have a quarterback anybody believed in at the time because Jordan Travis hadn't done a damn thing yet through 2021. And you find Johnny Wilson, who's a unique piece. You felt like you had some upside you could unlock there. And I think you unlocked a lot of that upside. So you know, nice work there, obviously. You know, Jaheim Bell comes in, gets drafted. Like, I honestly, considering the times that he ran and what he weighed in at, I'm kind of surprised he got drafted. So I thought that was awesome, you know, for Jaheim Bell. Hopefully, New England has him in their plans in a way that really focus. I know a lot of their scouting reports have said kind of need to be schemed open. My hope for him is that they emphasize that. I think if you're if you're that size of guy, like you need to be getting open against one-on-one coverage, you know, pretty well. Who else here? Oh, how about some high school guys? Renardo Green, anybody? I mean, second round for Renardo? That is like, I think, the absolute peak of what anybody thought he could go. And that is just, you look at the 49ers, look who they take. They take guys who play hard, guys who give a damn, guys who give effort like every single play. They really just kind of take dogs, you know, Pearsall for Florida, Renardo Green from FSU. Like, those type of guys are dudes who really care and really try. So I think that was important for FSU, you know, to get that in there as well. The high school development there, you know, Jordan Travis going to the Jets. Awesome. Now, look, I had the list on Twitter for the last 15 years. Quarterbacks drafted after pick 150, I think it is. Is that right? Yeah, only two guys in the last 15 years who are past pick 150 have started two full seasons worth of games in the NFL. So, like, can Jordan Travis be a starter in the NFL? Recent history says absolutely not. But, A, that's not a rule. It's just recent history. B, like, even if he can be a two-contract backup, a guy that uses mobility, that's fantastic, man. Like, that's great. Like, that's an awesome living to make. In addition, for, you know, a guy, I'm assuming he's making or probably made close to $1 million this past year, you know, somewhere around there. So, I mean, what a cool thing it is to be a young person, to have partnered with the Battle's End, you know, and assuming that you managed it well. Like, can you imagine being like a 23-year-old, well, he's not 23 anymore, but like, let's just say you're like 25, you're 2 years into your first gig. You've already got enough money to have like a down payment on a nice house. You don't come out of college with debt. Like that's a tremendous just head start in life that I think, you know, a lot of parents would love to be able to give to their kids. And in this case, I mean, it's really cool that Jordan was able to capitalize on his value while he's in college and now can add to that, you know, as well in the NFL. Michael Carlton in the chat says, quit sleeping on Travis. No, I don't think I'm sleeping on Travis at all. I mean, he's undersized. You know, there's arm and accuracy questions there, as the Jets put in their own scouting report that they released. But I think they really believe that there is potentially some upside there. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. If teams think you can be a legitimate starter, they take you earlier than pick 171. But they do have hope, right? Like, they're hoping to hit that lottery ticket, which is why they spend the pick. So I hope recent history is wrong. I hope Jordan gets a chance to start and balls out. Like, that would be fantastic. Also, history kind of shows if you've started in the league, if you get a couple games and a couple chances to start, it also increases your chance of having a longer career as a backup. And I think that's kind of key. If you're just a career backup only, I don't know, who's the best example of this? Probably Chase Daniel for a little while at least. Like that's harder to sustain that over the long term if you've never actually played in some sort of games. I think we hit pretty much everybody. I mean, Bethune, how cool is it for Bethune to get picked? Like that was wild. 10 draft picks, 6 in the top 100. I tweeted like, why do I think I'm going to see a lot of recruiting graphics with that stat. And Mike Norvell quote tweeted me and gave me the, I don't know, we'll see type thing. Also, shout out to Mike for winning the golf tournament over the weekend paired with Urban Meyer. I heard he had some clutch shots and Urban hit some really, a lot of the good shots. If you're a TV personality, you have a little more time to hit balls than if you're the head coach of a football team, because we know Norvell is pretty busy on some of this stuff. Now, as far as like the negative stuff, I mean, obviously, I think you feel for Fabian Lovett. The reason why a guy like that goes undrafted is clearly the medicals, but obviously he did get picked up already, I saw. You know, with Deloach, it's just the size, right? I mean, he's smaller than a number of the safeties in the draft who, you know, run faster. Like, it sucks, but it at the NFL level, you don't really have to choose. You don't have to be like, okay, like, do we have to sacrifice size or speed? The NFL is like, we want both. And I think it's real hard to sell, if you're a GM, to sell your owner and your coaching staff to take a linebacker that small. That's why I was like, man, I'm glad he was over 200, obviously, at the combine. But those NFL teams are also going to think, okay, he's that big at the combine. What's his playing weight? Like, you know, this guy's eating a bunch to get up to that number at the combine. So, yeah, that kind of stunk for him. And I totally agree with Graham, by the way, on Dent. I think if Dent had continued to play, his best football was happening towards the end of the season. Now, you can say Florida's offense was hot garbage and he looked better against them. Sure, fair. And Louisville had a lot of problems there on offense. Some of those problems were created by FSU's defense. But I do think he was coming on. He was getting healthier, but I saw that he already got picked up, I believe, by the Chargers. So good for him there. That was a very special group, obviously, in Tallahassee, and we just feel for those guys. I do think that this is going to be used by FSU in recruiting quite a bit. You know, when I ranked this staff compared to other staffs in the state on various abilities, you know, scouting, coaching, maintenance of culture, recruiting, evaluation, development, all those sort of things. Like, their lowest marks were clearly in the sales part, right? They do not have great salespeople on this staff. I think if you gave them truth serum, they would completely agree with that, right? A couple guys are okay. A lot of guys are not, just the type of personalities that are great at sales. And recruiting is sales. You know what does help sell, though, at times? Having a better product to sell. Now, you can point to the wins. You can point to 13-0. You can point to the ring. You can point to 23 wins in the last 10, in the last 2 years. You can point to the upward trajectory. You can point that your head coach, has made two New Year's Six Bowls in his last five seasons, dating back to his last year, obviously, at Memphis. But I got to tell you, I don't think some kids really, I don't think they really care about wins all that much when they're being recruited. Now, once they get on campus, if you're doing it right, they care about wins a little more. But I think they care a lot about the check. That's the check right now with NIL, and that's also the check you can earn with the program developing you in the NFL. They care about that NIL check and that NFL check. Mike Norvell's going to be able to sit down and say, hey, 10 draft picks. Look what we turned into this draft pick. That kid was a three-star. Look what we turned into this draft pick. Nobody wanted this kid out of the portal. We saw him. We believed in him. We invested the time and effort in him. He bought into our program. We told him up front it's going to be a lot of work and that there's a lot of guys we don't want, okay? But we wanted this guy. I think that's notable because that pitch is more likely to work if you have a lot of draft picks to point to. And this staff needs as much ammo as it can possibly get when it comes to the sales side of things. I mean, this has been a repeated issue that they can improve on. I'm not saying that they're terrible at it, but kind of where I am with them, it's like, okay, you need better stuff to sell, ultimately, if you're going to really improve in recruiting. So, yeah, we'll see how they do that. One quick rundown here. By the way, I see Chad in the chat. Chad of Resolution Home Loans, awesome job, man. I've used Resolution twice to get my home loans. Why am I saying Resolution? Just doing throwback ad reads now? The legendary team. Good God, bud. 844, you know what has not changed? The number. 844-FSU-LOAN, 844-FSU-LOAN is the number to call. See, this is the thing. When you go back with Chad for so many years, it's been a long-term, really good relationship there. 844-FSU-LOAN is the number to call. More than 500 Knollcast listeners have called that number and gotten their loan with the legendary team. All right. I got a text. I got to check this real quick. Oh, okay. It's just a high school coach absolutely airing out Colorado in my DMs, which I am not going to read on the air. All right. But he has a guy there, and that kid's not happy. So, anyway, let's go quickly over here what teams lost to the draft that are on FSU's schedule. So, Boston College, they lost Christian Mahogany, who's one of the best guards in the ACC. They also lost corner Elijah Jones, who was a pretty good corner. And actually, he's the guy that put the hit on, was it Benson, who fumbled late in that game and kind of made everybody pucker up a little bit right in that fourth quarter for a game that was really, for the most part, ugly, but not quite as close as that final score looked for a little bit. Cal lost a good defensive back, Patrick McMorris. He was a transfer from San Diego State, and he was a baller for Cal last year. Clemson lost two defensive tackles. If you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, I'm sorry to hear that. But you guys did make Rook a second-round pick and also lost Tyler Davis, who Florida State lost out recruiting a long time ago. Will Shipley, they lost Wiggins, a first-round corner. They lost Jeremiah Trotter, who was he second or third-round, I think, pick. Nice pick there for them. And they lost Xavier Thomas, who was like third or fourth round. So, I mean, that's five draft picks in the top 200 on defense, including a number of guys who were, first, second, third, fourth round. I don't know. Clemson is the co-favorite with FSU right now. Does that order make sense? Should Miami be in that conversation? Should Clemson actually be at the top? I don't know. I'm not really quite sure what to make of it yet. I do a lot of my upcoming stuff. We'll have our summer school series on 24/7 sports and we'll see. Oh, Charleston Knoll here. Great joke. He said, yeah, but look who they added in the portal. See what you did there. Yeah, they did not It did not add anybody in the portal. I don't know. If you're an assistant at Clemson right now, I mean, you got it pretty good, obviously. You make a great living. But are you happy that Clemson's not using the portal at all? I don't know. All right, continuing here. Duke, who you play, they lost two offensive linemen and a defensive lineman. To me, that's a huge deal. Like, that Duke team you played ended up having some pretty nice players on it, and the vast majority of those guys now are gone. Miami actually lost three defensive backs to the draft. You may have noted that Miami is taking a lot of DBs in the portal. I think there's a reason for that. They also lost center Matt Lee, who was kind of the heart and soul of that offense last year. This year, I think it'll be Cam Ward for them being the heart and soul. Apparently, they love him, and he's killing it down there. But who knows? Maybe he is, or maybe he's not, right? I'm sure we could go back and find articles and narratives about how Tyler Van Dyke is loving the new offensive coordinator and ready to take a step. And it's the offseason, right? Every single team media beat generally is going to write really positive stuff about a team, whether it's true or not, because that's what readership wants and because optimism sells like crazy in the offseason. Michael Carlton asked, did they end up with five first-rounders like they predicted? They actually did not end up with five first-rounders. They missed it. You know, if you think about it, like, going 0-for-5 sounds bad, but in the grand scheme of things, like, there are so many numbers out there. Like only missing by five when you could go like 1 to 100,000 billion is really not that big of a miss. You know, that's more of a very small miss. So you got to keep things in perspective. So Miami did go 0-for-5 on their first rounders. Make sure you check out LifeWallet Sports for more on their draft coverage at LifeWallet Sports, my favorite, one of my favorite Miami outlets. North Carolina lost Drake May. It's probably all we need to say about that, but I will say a little more. They also lost Cedric Gray, who's a really good linebacker for them, and Tez Walker, the wide receiver. I noticed that they took Jacoby Criswell back from Arkansas, and Criswell had been a guy who was allegedly in a quarterback competition with Drake May once upon a time after Sam Howell left. And do you actually believe that he was in a real competition with Drake May, who the New England Patriots turned down like an absolute bounty from the Vikings to instead just go ahead and keep the pick and draft Drake May? I kind of doubt it. That seems unlikely. But you know, what does that say about what North Carolina thinks about their current quarterback roster, that they went ahead and took another super veteran quarterback? That's three guys now who are not real young dudes in that room for UNC. Notre Dame lost offensive tackles in the draft at picks 5 and 59. So good luck to the Irish. They start their year in College Station. Nick Scorton's in College Station. He's a freak. He'll be like a top draft pick at DN. On the other side, Shamar Turner is a freak. So a little baptism by fire in that 105-degree weather in front of 110,000 there in College Station. I think if you're Patrick Payton and Marvin Jones Jr., you are also kind of just taking some notes, perhaps, about the offensive tackle talent that the Irish lost. They also lost two linebackers and a corner. So to me, that's still an awesome Notre Dame defense. I don't entirely think that their offensive line is going to reload like it has almost every single year in prior seasons. Now, Riley Leonard, as we saw last year, even on a crazy bum ankle, is just, you know, a magician at sack avoidance. He's basically Anthony Richardson level as far as sack avoidance, and that guy's kind of like the recent gold standard among high-level quarterback prospects. So that will help. But if you're scouting FSU's opponents, Notre Dame losing two really high-level offensive tackles, including the best one in the country, that's notable to me. That's not nothing. That game could be a rock fight in South Bend. Florida lost Ricky Pearsall. That's the only guy they lost, I believe, on my sheet. Did Florida lose anybody else? Like, I ran the query. I don't see anybody else that got drafted for the Gators. I'm just going to assume they have a lot of talent coming back in Gainesville. No? Oh, okay. Not great. So that's basically what I have there as far as what your opponents lost to the draft. And I do think it's important to keep it in perspective because you just lost 10 guys to the draft. But other teams also lost important players to the draft. And let's just kind of remind ourselves of that. As far as guys who I think will be, like, I guess kind of likely picks next year. Today on Cover 3, I threw out AZ Thomas. I think he's a guy that is on pace to have a really strong year. You know, could be a high draft pick. I think Patrick Payton, certainly. If Marvin Jones Jr. can put it all together, I could see him, you know, being one. Like, those are kind of the three obvious ones for me. You know, Josh Farmer's a guy who I think will get drafted. I don't think he's like a first-round type pick unless he takes some kind of enormous leap as a pass rusher, which it is important that you rush the passer if you're not enormous. For the NFL draft purposes. Look, Jackson, your other D tackle, certainly could get drafted, and I think if he plays to his potential will, but I'd like to see him do it in some games first, clearly. Who else? I mean, I think there's some chance Darius Washington could get drafted. I think one of your backs, whether it's LT or Roydell Williams, would have a chance to get drafted. A lot of people are saying only 18 running backs got drafted in this prior draft. Like, do we think that you have two of the top 18 in the country in one backfield? I don't personally, but I think there's some chance that one of the guys gets drafted. LT's versatility as a pass catcher certainly could help, and Roydell's vision and toughness and pass blocking could help. You know, DJU, I think the numbers would clearly say no to getting drafted, but like Joe Milton got drafted in the fifth or sixth round, and he does have a better arm than DJ, but DJ has a pretty strong arm. He has some tools. I think somebody will take a shot on DJ in the draft, assuming that he plays this year about as well as he played last year at Oregon State. Those are kind of the main guys. Ventrell Cypress, again, is somebody who I think will have a chance to be drafted. I think Cheyenne Brown is somebody, you know, who would have a chance to be drafted. I think Benson probably runs well enough to get drafted. And if he's the guy, we have seen Mike Norvell force feed a top target before. So I think Benson, assuming he can play better than he did last year at Alabama, obviously, which you have to have. I mean, you know, you take him based on his upside, not based on how he played. That's another guy who could get drafted. So it's really not crazy. It's not crazy. It's not automatic. It's not crazy to think that you could have another 10 draft picks next year out of Florida State. That's doing something, man. I think that's a culture that guys are bought into, that guys are willing to work for, a culture that, you know, I think fosters the work and fosters development. And you know, I'm excited to see what they can do here. All right. So let's talk portal. Before we do, let's talk Congruity HR Solutions, Congruity HR. Link numbers are in the show notes. As always, Matt Lewis and his team do such a tremendous job. I know a lot of y'all Knowles who own businesses out there, you guys have hooked up with Matt. It just awesome job, whether it's payroll, HR solutions, Congruity has you covered. They can help you with all of your HR needs. Let's talk a little portal. So a couple notes I wrote down here. Number one, zero portal re-entry from FSU. All over the country, I'm seeing, oh, this guy's back in the portal after portaling in December. If you got a guy that portals in December and he portals out again, you know what we call that? A miss. That's a miss by you in your staff in evaluating the player. Now, I'm not saying that you never have a miss, but like for a guy to come in and then bounce right away, what has to happen? Like maybe some freshman early enrollee just plays his butt off, you know, and beats him out? Okay, sure. Like that's kind of an acceptable miss. I looked at it. I talked to some guys. I think Florida State's at like 11 what they would deem like hits already as far as these guys being what they thought they would be or better, and probably three kind of TBD, still figuring it out, but they have some kind of longer term potential there, and potential multi-year guys, obviously. But those guys also are dudes who probably will play. And I know Chris Hummer of 24/7 Sports was pointing this out, the really impressive job that FSU has done with its portal hit rate. And I made the comment on Twitter. I said, man, I see so many guys entering the portal who I know for a fact FSU passed on out of high school, or re-entering the portal, FSU passed on again due to character concerns. That's just, I know that. And I do think this staff does a real, like, you want to know how they hit at such a high rate. I think a lot of it is because they, not never, but they rarely miss so far, rarely miss, knock on wood, on the character stuff, right? The stuff that blows up your locker room. The stuff where, okay, other people see this guy not showing up, not caring, not working hard, acting like a dumbass, all that kind of stuff. There's just not a lot of that. Like, there's, Norvell runs a pretty tight ship in many regards, and there's just not much of that type of stuff tolerated in the program once the kid gets in there. And I think they do a pretty good job of operating a filter on that portal before the player gets to Tallahassee. So I did want to note that. Zero re-attrition, zero re-entry of the portal. Like, that's kind of notable to me. And I'm not going to name the guys that I know they passed on. You can either trust me or not trust me. I've been doing this for, we've been doing the show, what, 15 years? I think you guys know that I shoot you pretty straight, good or bad. Second note, I'd rather have my entire class in December than wait and get guys in the spring window. The reason for it is pretty obvious, right? I want to, if I believe in my program, if I believe in my developmental process, I want to have as much time with the player that I possibly can. This is the same argument, by the way, for probably need to be a little bit better at high school so that you have more time with these guys, more time to develop them. It's especially and really important in the portal because you're just getting them. Do you know how hard it is to come and assimilate into a program in June and be a contributor in the fall? You can be a Keon Coleman, who's an absolute freak show of an athlete. Okay, cool. You know what? Yeah, he can do it. He was pretty ready-made. Some of these other players, if they're not guys that you coached at a former spot, like if I was a new DC at a school, I'm probably trying to poach some guys off my old school that knew my terminology, knew my coverages, all that stuff, especially in the secondary. I'd much rather have the hay in the barn for December, be able to work with these guys in spring football, install my systems with them there, making sure they understanding what they don't understand, so I can continue to rep that and help them out with that over the summer. That said, this spring portal window has largely sucked, just going to be frank with y'all. I was not someone who's buying in on it being crazy. I know some other people were, and I don't think they were making that up. I think that their sources were telling them it was going to be crazy, so they bought in with that. Mine were sort of mixed on it. It's like, well, we'll see. Mine were like, hey, if some of these collectives don't get their acts together, it could be crazy, but we'll have to see if they do. I think ultimately a lot of these schools kind of got their stuff together, at least at, like, I would say the top 30 or 40 Power 5 schools. They largely got it together, you know, and they kept most of the players who they really wanted to keep. By the way, that includes FSU. I don't think FSU lost a single guy to this. Well, clearly they didn't, but like, I think they kept basically every single guy that they reasonably could have kept and wanted to keep. You know, Bless Harris is probably the one, but like, if you're a tackle who has a chance to start, you're not going to stay as a backup because you're going to go somewhere else and be the starter and make real starter money. So I don't think the spring portal this year was very good. I'm curious as to how certain teams will change their strategy based on what happened this year in terms of availability and supply and how they attack next December. Obviously, that includes FSU some, but I don't think they would have changed what they did in December a whole lot. Third point on this. FSU so far has not really done much with the spring portal window. Now, I'm not a big believer in action for the sake of action. Let's have action with a purpose. Action for the sake of achieving an end goal. I'm not really sure how many guys in the portal are both a fit for what you want to do and also can actually help you on the field. That's kind of a good thing in some ways because it means that you largely like your roster. Your roster is way better than it was in 2021 when it was basically just a cattle call, right? Like, hey, we'll take anybody and everybody that can come help. Now, at certain spots, you're in a weird spot. You're like, man, I'd really like to get somebody here for depth. I have a very specific use case and a very specific need here. I need a multi-year guy who's good enough to ultimately be a starter at FSU, but is cool being like a backup, maybe a backup plus type role this year. Good luck. Like, that's not easy to find. I will give you the example here of defensive tackle. But to me, there was like three or four, let's call them high-end D tackles on the market this year. I think they're all going to get close to $1 million each after calling around this morning. The thing is, that is like premier number one D tackle starter money. Okay? That's not backup D tackle money. FSU is in the market for a good backup rotational D tackle who, if you had an injury, is good enough to slide in and be a starter type guy. Do you know what happens if you pay a backup D tackle like $1 million or anywhere close to it? Roster chaos. Because all of these kids, and I talk to a lot of different coaches out there, I talk to a lot of different GMs, they all tell each other what they make. In fact, there's an opponent on FSU's schedule this year, and I'm not going to give you the name because I respect the guy who told it to me, and I'm not just going to blow up his spot. They lost a really good, important player. Sorry about that. I didn't want to use the dump button there for the cough. A school on FSU's schedule this year. Road team, actually. I don't need to narrow it down any more than that. They lost a very important player from their roster because their collective was worried about losing the backup, and they paid the backup a lot. And the starter was like, F that, I want double of the backup. And the thing is, the backup really can't totally play yet, okay? Not at the level that is going to be good for them. And they're like, we don't really have the money to pay that. And you know what? That starter, he actually got what he wanted elsewhere. One of the better players in the portal. But I don't know that that guy ever hits the portal and starts looking around if he's not pissed off. So there is a whole like human element to this, okay? You can't go and be like, oh, hey, we really need a backup D tackle. There's only like three or four guys out there you really think can play at your level and be a real impact type dude. Let's pay him $1 million or close to it, which is what I think like the Michigan State kids are probably going to get, or close to it, you know, definitely like way more than $500,000, I think, in those cases. Without upsetting your room. And of course you'd be upset. If you're a starter and you realize the backup's getting paid more than you or the same as you, like, if I'm a starter, I'm going to make more than the backups. Period. So there's some, like, roster composition, roster building, and supply chain issues here to where I don't think you want to upset that room. I think you really like what you have overall in that room, and you would like to add to the depth of that room. I think you'd like to specifically add with a guy who can be a multi-year dude, like a guy who can really contribute in 25. On the off chance that both like Farmer and Jackson were to leave for the NFL draft. So, but yes, that is like I think a delicate thing that you have to balance. Okay. Receiver. Receiver, I don't think they like a lot of the big guys in the portal right now. And receiver is a spot where you definitely get negatively recruited after bringing in Keon and Johnny and Benson and Micah Pittman and those dudes for not developing your own in-house guys through high school. Like, that's an area where some of the negative recruiting has been hot and heavy. If you don't find somebody out there who you think is a clear upgrade and also not like a dumbass, you know, behavior-wise over Kentron and Darion and those guys, I think you roll the dice with them and hope to hit to get some, at least some decent production. I think you give Hakeem as many possible reps as you can to get him ready for a breakout year whenever that year is to come. So I think they would have loved to have taken a big outside receiver. Not a small guy, not a slot, if one existed. But I don't know that one really did exist, to be honest. We'll see on that. But if you are a staff and you think you're good at developing, and I think this is a good developing staff, the devil that you know is better than the devil you don't. And that's why I think you only go out there and take one if it's like a legitimate, clear upgrade to where everybody's like, oh yeah, you know what? Keon Coleman, that works. He's way better than anybody else on your roster. That's an obvious one. You go get him, you go do it. Okay, let me see here. Some other things. Already gave the example on that one. Talked about D-tackle balance. Oh, I also think like it's a pretty good indication of overall roster health if you are not like needy at a whole lot of positions. Like you go into the spring window with some very specific wants and very few like obvious big needs. That's a good job. That speaks to overall roster health. Like your roster is much better than it was a couple of years ago. And I feel like you really feel great, you know, about what you did, in the winter window. Nick Snyder says, I remember the coach at Michigan State lamenting that he lost an NFL receiver when Keon hit the portal. Yeah, exactly. Like guys, Keon played like half the year hurt. He had a terrible combine, just like legitimately terrible. Had a chance to run a 40 on his pro day, didn't, stood on a 4.61, which is like a baffling decision by NFL draft people. And he still went with what, the first or second pick of the second round? Like a top 35 pick in the entire country? That's pretty wild. All right. Chris Connor says FSU needs a QB1. I don't think that they do, honestly. Yeah, pick number one of round two. So yeah, a top 33 player in the whole country. I don't think they need a QB1. I think they went out and they like DJ. I think they like their whole quarterback room, honestly. However, we did get some Patreon questions about this. And one of them was like, how it was asked was basically like, where would you rank DJ among the opponent's quarterbacks you're going to face on this year's schedule? I thought it was actually kind of a fun exercise. So let's just go through it. Like, would you rather take DJ or Haynes King? I don't know. Like, they're kind of in the same range to me, kind of coin flip. Yeah, if you want to argue for DJ, I totally get that. If you want to argue for Haynes King, he had a really nice year last year. DJ or Thomas Castellanos, I'm taking DJ. DJ or Seth Hennigan, I think you can kind of probably argue that both ways. DJ or whoever's going to start for Cal, I'm taking DJ. DJ or Preston Stone, I know like a lot of stats guys love Preston Stone, but I don't even know if SMU loves Preston Stone that much. So again, I'm going to take DJ. DJ or Klubnik, like this is an interesting one. Klubnik didn't look very good last year. Klubnik did beat out DJ. You know, some of the numbers were similar in some spots and not in others. I think they're probably a similar level quarterback, right? DJ or Riley Leonard. I'm taking Riley Leonard, obviously. I think he's a higher level player. DJ or Cam Ward. I think the answer here is it's not a slam dunk, but I think it is an obvious one because Florida State waited forever to take Cam Ward, you know, because or to take DJ because they were waiting on Cam Ward. I think that obviously shows Florida State's preference was to have Cam Ward. Now, at some point, I think they also showed you that they didn't think that the gap necessarily was enormous, you know, like because they eventually did move on and settled for DJ, and I think are pretty happy with what they have in DJ, especially with some of the weight loss. I think that's something they want to continue to see, like continue to get in even better shape because they will need his legs. But and it's very clear, like they valued Ward over DJ for a good part of that process because that's who they were waiting on. They knew they had DJ in the back pocket if they needed to go get him. DJ or whoever North Carolina has, I mean, no contest. DJ or Malik Murphy at Duke, again, I think no contest there. DJ and DJ or Graham Mertz, I think they're kind of similar prospects in some like some ways as far as efficiency and effectiveness. They get there in different ways, but like I don't think either of them are necessarily like top 15 quarterbacks in the sport. They're just decent veterans, right? They're kind of bridge guys to what you hope is something better. In FSU's case, it's either Glenn or Kromenhoek, and in Florida's case, it's obviously Lagway, you know. So I think they're pretty damn happy with what they got. It's also worth asking, like, what kind of quarterback can you get in the portal if the guy doesn't follow a fired or changing coach? I don't know. What kind of quarterback can you get in the portal if it's just a one-year guy? Almost all of the quarterbacks last year who were portal quarterbacks who had big-time years, they were in year two. Like Penix was in year two at Washington. Nix was in year two at Oregon. There are very few quarterbacks who have come and been one-year only guys and killed it. You know, like that's just kind of the facts. Now, I think the sample set is too small and too early in this portal process to say that it's a rule. And you have to be willing to change your opinions when you get new data and new evidence. So we'll continue to monitor that. But no, I think Florida State did just fine for what it was looking at quarterback. Like you got a guy who I think you have decent confidence in, veteran dude, knows what he's doing. It's not a rebuilding year, but it's also not a reloading year. It's somewhere in the middle, which I think speaks to the great job that you do at Battles End to allow you to acquire talent and retain talent, and also the nice job the staff has done in recent years. Okay. Let me see here. Some other items. Oh, if you want to feel better about yourself, some of the teams you play also have lost big-time guys to the portal and are having problems. Chad says Oklahoma quarterbacks. Was Gabriel... It was his first year at OU, right? He did have a good year. Yeah, that's a good point. I like that one. Maybe you get more. I saw Tremel Jones over the weekend at OT7, which is one of the big time 7-on-7 events. It was here in Orlando. If you guys want to go, I'll actually be out there again this weekend. It's down at like Boggy Creek Park ish, which is down in Kissimmee. I don't think SFE, which the team Tremel's playing with, is going to be back this weekend, but there will be a lot of good quarterbacks there. And I thought he played, you know, really well. You know, he's and by the way, Kevin A in the chat says Gabriel was also following his old coordinator. Yeah, that's a good point. So that kind of fits with the whole thing of like which quarterbacks are truly available and which ones are like they're in the portal, but it's already predetermined where they're going to go. That's, I think there's something to be said, you know, for that. So Tremel's just like in camp settings and 7-on-7, like super clean, nice release, ball comes out good. He actually had to face a kid that you guys will probably see in the first round someday named Bryce Underwood. He's a kid out of Michigan. He's committed to LSU. I mean, Tremel scored on every single drive that he played against this guy's team. And then it wasn't enough. With 26 seconds left, Underwood gets the ball back and throws three just absolute freaking lasers down the field. The kid drops the first one, and the other two he completes. Touchdown, and it's the money ball. So they do this thing called a money ball in 7-on-7 now at some of these tournaments where, I mean, it's worth 10 points. So Tramiel could not have played better. He literally, like, he put his team up with 26 seconds left, and he scored a touchdown on every drive he played. And, I mean, sometimes you're just going against a guy who's a freak of nature, which Underwood is, and that was that. But it was good to see him out there, and he continues to be a guy I think who's a nice prospect. I don't personally rate him quite as high as I did Kroman Hoke, and not quite as high as I did Glenn, but I do have him over like Chris Parson. And I mean, if you do sign him, I think that's a heck of a nice job that you've done in signing quarterbacks in the 3-year window. And that would give FSU one of the better quarterback rooms, in my opinion, assuming everybody stays, really in the country. I'm like dry mouth today. Crazy. All right. And we are 50 minutes in. Is he a better prospect than Francois? To me, yes. I think some of that is largely dependent on how you feel about the ability to fix someone's accuracy, especially on short and like the short intermediate routes. Okay. Meaning, I always had issues with Francois because I didn't think he threw a very catchable ball. And I thought his accuracy numbers were just terrible, which ultimately proved out to be a bit of a problem in college as well. I also think Jones could be a better leader than Francois was ultimately at Florida State. I don't think that's really any question. But if you guys go and like you nerd out on some of this draft stuff, Sean Payton had some interesting thing here. And he basically said, I don't care about like deep accuracy in terms of ball placement, you know, what shoulder you're putting it on, all that kind of stuff, all that much. If you put it on him, I need my receiver to win deep. He said, accuracy and ball placement in the short and short and intermediate stuff is really important, because that, you, like, just the mere act of catching a ball on a deep ball is probably an explosive play. But catching a ball on a short path is not going to produce an explosive play unless it is put on the correct shoulder with the correct pace, you know? And that really kind of resonates. Like, that's like, I think intuitively I've known that and I've always applied that when I'm looking at guys. But that's a great way of actually saying it to explain to the listener. So I'm stealing it from Sean Payton, who did have quite a bit of success with a really good short passer with a guy named Drew Brees there in New Orleans. But to answer your question, I mean, Francois definitely had a better arm than Tramiel Jones does and was a better athlete overall. Frame-wise, they are very similar guys. Like, neither of them are big-looking dudes. But I think Jones is cleaner. I think Jones has better hand talent in that, like, he doesn't just fire rockets on the wrong shoulder to guys, like I frequently saw Francois do. So I'm a little biased, and I would take Jones, but I don't know. Am I letting how Francois' career turned out maybe cloud my judgment here? I don't know. Longtime Nolcast listeners knew that I was not really all that high on Francois basically ever. So pull the tapes if you want. Chad was saying he was thinking Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, and Jalen Hurts. It's going back a ways, but I think that's exactly right. Are teams doing a better job of keeping their talent in-house now? Like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, portal quarterback was really, really loaded. I don't know if we had that this past year. Like, if Cam Ward's your most talented quarterback in the portal, I mean, who knows? Maybe wins the Heisman. Maybe he's just decent, right? I don't think there's anybody out there who's just crazy, obvious, no doubt, you know, first round type guy. We had Ryan Wilson today on Cover 3, and I asked him, like, there was no quarterback pick between 15 and 150. Okay. Jordan went 174. It's like, if Cam Ward had not returned to school, would he have been that guy who was like somewhere between like the second and fourth round? And he's like, yeah, I think that was actually probably the guy, you know, who would have plugged in to that, kind of area there. All right. Finally, in a blinding flash to the obvious, which is a term that I'm stealing from my dad, and I don't know if he stole that from someone else, but he always kind of said it, and I enjoyed it. We have said on this podcast for like a million times, for at least the past couple of years, why FSU had to get out of the ACC is because eventually schools will pay athletes as employees or some type of employment, maybe not employee, type of relationship. And that money will come as a share of your revenue. Well, guys, that day's coming fast. If you pay attention to this, there's this video, or there's this case called the House case. I did a video on this on the Cover 3 channel explaining what the House case was. And basically, I think you should go watch it. It's only 8 minutes long. I will link it in the show notes tonight. If you are interested, you can just click on it. But I think it's pretty good. I'm not going to explain the entire thing to you because it would take another 8 minutes of this show. We're coming up, you know, on an hour. But the settlement is going to be like a billion or 2 billion probably. And if the thing went the distance, it would be somewhere between 3 and 5 billion, according to, you know, the plaintiff's lawyers, of course. So who knows what it would really be. But, you know, ultimately, it's about back NIL and lost opportunities that the schools colluded via the NCAA to prevent athletes from getting. But what I'm getting at is Jeffrey Kessler, the plaintiff's attorney, has said that they are not going to accept a settlement if there's not a new system implemented for athletes going forward. So part of what they're talking about is like basically, okay, we're going to share this much, you know, percentage of revenue from TV deals. And this is what Graham and I have said for years. And I think a lot of y'all Knollcast listeners are aware of this. So this is a bit of an I told you so for you and your friends. When you have people out there on social media or on TV who disingenuously or just idiotically take your pick, because if they know it and are ignoring it, it's disingenuous. If they don't know it, to me, it's really bad at their job, but who were like, oh, look, Florida State wins. Like, Florida State's fine. They win in the ACC. They're competing for national titles. They're competing for playoff berths in the ACC. They're fine. Like, yeah, they are in the short term. FSU's trying to be proactive because they know what's coming. And ultimately, if South Carolina is making 3X what FSU is making, you're just not going to compete in the long term if you are not proactive and get out on time, you know, to make sure that you have the same amount of revenue. People are like, it's a money grab. I'm like, yes, it is a money grab for sure. But you really have to make sure that you're getting the big piece of the big pie, or at least that's a bad analogy by me. Apologies. You need to make sure you're getting your piece of the big pie, because the ACC's pie does not measure up what the SEC or the Big Ten make. Chad asked, would that change significantly slow down players from transferring? It actually would, yeah. I think you'd see guys put under contracts and maybe NIL move more in-house in some ways, more revenue sharing with the guys, more and formalize that in the way of contracts. Yeah. And to me, ultimately, excuse me, I don't think anybody out there has ever turned off their TV or stopped watching the sport because a guy is making some money. If you are, you're probably not watching this show at 10 o'clock at night, but I'm just saying, I've never really met anybody who actually followed through on that. I have met people who are like, it sucks because I can't form an attachment to the players on my team because when they get good, they get snatched away. Now, that's not really FSU guys, because FSU has done a crazy good job at the battle's end, obviously. I mean, I'm biased with that, but I think the results speak for themselves. 10 draft picks, 13-0, you guys know the story. But I think the inability to form an attachment to players on your roster and to be able to like to tell your kids or your buddies, hey, I'm really excited about this guy coming back, and not have that kind of clinch feeling that you have for the 6 weeks where the portal's open in spring, that hurts. You need to have that go away. And the only way you can do that legally is to put these guys on contracts. So I do think that the quicker we get to that, the more we can speak about rosters with some certainty. It will dramatically decrease the amount of portal movement going on overall. Won't totally kill it. It will decrease it quite a bit. A lot of the craziness that we talk about will go away. And I think a lot of college coaches out there that I talk to are willing, for the most part, to give up some of the money they make to kind of recapture some of the control that they once had. And it is kind of a choice. Like, you have to give up some of the money that you make, probably because now some of that money is going to be diverted to paying the guys that make it happen on Saturday on the field, not on the sideline. Do you want to talk about the For the Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social, Township, all of those awesome dudes, Social Kitchen? I just, tremendous supporters of ours, always. Matt Thompson does such a good job. Saw him tweeting this weekend about the draft and everything else. And Matt, awesome working with you guys. Everybody in town, make sure you hit that up. If you're in town for graduations, definitely got to hit him up. Max Owen says, what's the timeline on revenue sharing in your opinion? I don't think we'll have it within like the next 2 years, but I could see it by like the 26th season potentially. There's a lot of stuff you got to work out there. I also think part of this is a little bit of a dog and pony show for Congress. If the schools in NCAA work together and they settle this thing and they go to Congress and say, hey, we know you kind of laughed at us because we actually never took any real affirmative steps in solving our own problems. We just went to Congress to beg, which is a fair reaction from Congress, actually, in my opinion. But now we've actually tried this, and we tried that, and we tried this, and we tried that. Now, Congress, can we have an antitrust exemption? Now, Congress, can we have a declaration that these guys are not employees? I don't know if they'll get both. But yeah, I think that's probably where we're heading. Now, do I think Congress is going to do it for them this year in an election year? No. Probably not. How did they like Cabot Citrus Farms? It was a lot of fun. No free ads. I would say it's probably so much better a year from now when everything's grown in. They have the extra course open to play. So we played the one, and then we played the 11 hole. It was a really nice day, my dad and I. Actually played with a guy who covers Penn State, a buddy of mine. So it was a good time. I probably won't go back until the other course opens and everything is allowed to grow in. But it's really cool. It's definitely a good experience. So, all right. Any additional questions we have tonight? I feel like this is just going through my other notes here, if you guys care. Oh, here's one. How many teams would kill to have a team with a defense with 5 or 6 probable draft picks and a really veteran offense called by Mike Norvell? Man, I think a bunch, honestly, right? Like, I mean, who would not trade their lot for the 24 season with FSU right now? Not many. I mean, Ohio State wouldn't. Georgia wouldn't. I don't think Ole Miss would because of quarterback. Shoot. I mean, there's got to be Oregon would not, Texas would not, and that's 5. You can probably like argue 5 or 6 more. Like maybe Miami, it's kind of their all-in year, I guess you can say. But I mean, there's not 20 teams that are like, oh, we're not trading spots to FSU. There's probably not 15. There's probably like 5 to 10. That's a hell of a job of stability that Norvell and these guys have done, losing 10 draft picks and still just kind of bouncing right back for a team that doesn't really recruit high school at the super elite level. You know, like they're a blue chip ratio team, but they're not that crazy, you know, crazy high level. So yeah, I'm I'm excited to see what this team does, and we'll catch you guys again next week. Take care, y'all.